And thank you, Hercules, and welcome to the pep talk for what will be Sunday, March 3rd, 2004. But we're doing something a little different tonight, folks. Basically, I overcommitted, so I have a private obligation going on during the scheduled airtime. So what I figured I would do was kind of a cheat, but also kind of a treat. And what we're going to do is we're going to play the audio from one of my very first semi-professional interviews, sort of a precursor, a prototype, an inspiration for what this show has now become. So let's we'll call it the proto pep talk, or the we'll call it the pilot episode of the pep talk. Way back in 2011, late April at Schiller Theater, I had the opportunity to interview the one and only Tony Clifton, and I thought this would be great to just play for folks, because keeping with our Andy Kaufman theme throughout this year, what would have been Andy Kaufman's 75th birthday, and depending on what you believe, the 40th anniversary of his passing. And so Tony Clifton, I don't really need to explain who Tony Clifton is. If you are familiar in the world of Andy Kaufman, if you're not and you're listening, then you will definitely get a good sense of who Tony Clifton is. So now this is very unique because it's not just going to be the interview. We are basically going to be playing the audio from a YouTube video recorded by friend of the show, friend of my life, and our very first guest on the actual pep talk, Bar Capuano. Woo! And we're going to bring Bart on to talk a little bit about how this all came to be. But basically, this is a YouTube video that Bart made, posted, I think, about 11 years ago, but it was recorded, as I said, at the end of April at the Schiller Theater Expo in Parsippany, New Jersey, in 2011. And basically what this is a really cool chronicle of what a weekend at Schiller is like. And then, of course, the sort of headliner, if you will, is the fact that Tony Clifton making his very first ever convention appearance. And I think only, definitely not coming back to Schiller ever again after this. But he did do a concert that night, and he was signing autographs for folks during the day. And Bart caught it all on camera. And was gracious enough to ask me if I wanted to actually interview Tony, and it was really a highlight of my life, a highlight of I think my interviewing career, we'll say, and really did kind of spark something in me and get a ball rolling here. So now Bart has done a few of these, and we're gonna bring Bart in here, and we're gonna kind of talk to Bart a little bit about how this came to be, and some of the other interviews that he has done at Schiller, and just sort of the little life of its own that this YouTube video has taken on the last 11 years. And I think what I'll also do is I think I'll put a clip to the YouTube video as well. So if you're listening live, you can also pop the YouTube video on at the same time and get like a good stereo, old school stereo effect, like with Friday Night Videos, when Friday Night Videos used to be stereo simulcast on like Z100. You'd watch the videos on TV and then listen on your radio or whatever at the same time. I think they did it actually, Bar, you might remember, they did that with one of the Ewok movies.
What's that?
Ewok movies?
Yeah.
And you would listen to like 77 AM ABC radio.
Yes.
While it was on, playing on TV. Stereo sound, the old school stereo sound.
Yeah.
So there's your introduction. Daddy, how's it going?
Hey, how's it going? Yeah, you pulled me in. No, I was pulling up the video just because as you were talking about it as a YouTube video, I thought, how many views did we get? You seem to think that we got a lot, so I hadn't checked in like 10 years. And
we got like 13K.
We have a lot, yeah.
20 comments, and here's the other
thing. That's a lot for me, you know?
a couple months ago, I noticed that somebody on some other comedy YouTube channel cut out a minute 10 from your video of me interviewing Tony and posted it as like a short or on their YouTube page. I forget who it was. I think they gave a credit. But to where the source of the video was. But I was surprised. I was shocked. I was shocked because, so I'm an old man now, right? I'm 49, and one of the things I like to do is just, if there's nothing on TV, instead of flipping through channels, I flip through YouTube for things to watch.
Absolutely. It's free.
And I came across the thumbnail, and at first I thought it was your video.
Oh.
And then I was like, that's not it. Somebody.
Yeah, I wonder. Yeah, I'm not sure how I feel about it. I'll have to check it out. But I mean, my first instinct is to feel a little honored. I mean, they didn't just rip the whole thing and take credit. So, yeah, I mean, I'm a fan of people taking excerpts. I mean, yeah, especially on YouTube. It's probably fine. That's great.
I'll see if I can ever find who it is and let you know who it is. I feel like he did in the comments have a link to the whole video, so I think he did right. If not, you know, then yeah, we'll get him.
Cool.
But, so let's talk about this a little bit.
Yeah.
So 13 years ago,
13?
you had gotten this sort of this honorific of being able to go through Chiller Theater Expo, and interview people.
Yeah, I mean, it started with me just, like, paying. I wanted to go so bad because I was losing touch with why I wanted to be a filmmaker. You know, I was teaching video and graphic design and in Parsippany at a school called Anthem Institute, which has since gone underground. Yeah, you know, no, not in a bad way. Probably needed to, or it became something else, another entity.
Right, a name change, because it had been something before that. Too,
yeah, think, yeah. Right? Yeah, but I'm not bashing. I mean, as teachers, at least our staff on the graphic design department, I think every single one of us tried our hardest to create new and edgy experiences, and the school allowed us to do that. And I'm sorry it didn't completely carry on, but I think I was done after 6 years anyway. So, you know, it is what it is. But that being said, in that phase of teaching, somewhere around the sixth or fifth year, I was like, you know, I need some inspiration. And then all of a sudden, like right in the town where I'm working, the Parsippany Hilton has the Chiller Theater convention. And, you know, I had been just kind of chit chatting with friends about, from like high school and about how, like, we used to go to those Fangoria Weekend of Horrors conventions in New York. And, you know, to think that there's one just down the street from where I'm working is super convenient and cool. So let me go and let me invite my good friends who also enjoy conventions. And, you know, you guys came and, man, it was great, actually, the first time I went. And then after, like, year after year, I just started to get a little burnt out. But there were certain gold mines. And yeah, one of them was meeting this guy, Simon Hancock, who, you know,
great
he just...
Simon Hancock.
Yeah, he just... He that one year I paid to get in, and then every year after, he said, like, let me get you in. Let's just get you in, because he liked the interviews we were doing. And, you know, I wasn't doing them all. I wanted to do a few, and that's what got it started. But then I quickly, like, realized that I'm not the one who needs to be interviewing someone like Danielle Harris. Simon should be. And I'm not the one who should be interviewing Ralph Macchio. John Pepe should be. You know, and so same with when we got you to interview Tony Clifton, you know. And it
Tony
just
Clifton, Curtis Armstrong was another one.
Yeah, that was a great one.
And the Joker and the OnStar Batman commercials.
Yeah,
that was a fun one.
Yeah, which I have since looked up.
On YouTube is John Pepe versus Curtis Armstrong. And I always thought that was a really good
right.
title there. Yeah, so I just want to talk a little bit about Simon. So people who've listened to the show, you know, one of my regular guests is Stuart Hirsch. And Stuart Hirsch brings guests to Chiller. And Stuart actually brought Tony Clifton to Chiller this year.
Nice.
And Stuart and I have talked about that probably almost every time Stuart has been on the show. We kind of diverge into that because it's just so much fun to talk about. And as you will soon hear and possibly watch if you do go to the YouTube channel.
Yeah.
And so basically, Simon, Simon was guest relations. So he was really the liaison between people like Stewart and their clients, and then Kevin and Chiller, right? Mm-hmm. So Simon was your go-between. Mm-hmm. And so Simon, everybody loves Simon. Simon was a wonderful guy.
Yeah.
I still, to this day, meet people who knew Simon and just was always so warm and friendly and just really, I think, embodied the excitement and energy of Chiller.
Absolutely.
And unfortunately, we did lose Simon a few years ago. You know, I think that Chiller has been a little different without his influence, but it hasn't changed too much. But there was definitely something that that Simon brought to the table that really made Chiller what it was, for especially for that era.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of badasses at Chiller, and they're pretty badass being badass. But Simon was kind. Simon was a friendly, kind, kind of mischievous dude who worked there and had enough connections and sort of energy and just that kindness and friendliness, which is actually what I think endeared him to all the guests that came. Yeah. So sometimes we didn't have to, and I don't know, is this going to get anybody in trouble? But, you know, we didn't have to talk to anybody too high up at Chiller beyond Simon. We would just check in with Simon and we would beeline to the celebrities that he knew and had good relationships with, and he had good relationships with many of them. So it was always good. Yeah. It was always really fun.
His interview with Lou Ferrigno, cause you had him interview Lou Ferrigno. Mm. That was a wonderful interview. He was so good.
A good example. Yeah. Cause there's a relationship there. And so you get to actually just feel like you're sitting in on a conversation between Lou Ferrigno and a friend, which is, it's more enriched, I think.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Simon was everybody's friend, and very unique look, right? And it's funny because you know he had those ripped jeans, and the year the Chiller after he passed, they had on a table at the entranceway, sort of the hotel, like towards where, you know, right before he went to the signings and stuff. Kevin Clement was sitting there at a table with a pair of Simon's distinct ripped jeans, and because Simon had this very specific look, and he always had these like these pre-ripped jean kind of things, you know. And if you knew Simon, you could sign his jeans, and that was just a really nice gesture, a neat thing. And I remember Kevin and us, you know, we just shared our stories of Simon and just had some good laughs about who he was, and you know, it was just good warm feelings all around. And you know, again, it was definitely a great loss to that community, there's no doubt, and I think we were very fortunate to have known him.
Agreed.
So you got to do this for a few years, and you, was it now, so as far as the Tony Clifton thing, was it specifically, you had just seen that he was going to be there, and you were like, oh, I'm going to go anyway, we could do Tony, or had you been told in advance that he was going to be there? I forget how we kind of found out that Tony was going to be there.
Ooh, that is a good question. It wasn't a big event, though. I remember going, some of it had to do with the guests, maybe, right? Or did you know in advance that he was going?
That's what I'm trying to remember.
John.
You know, we're talking 13 years ago. And I feel like we just kind of saw that he was going to be on the calendar, on the schedule. And maybe Stewart had mentioned to me at the one, because I'd already struck up a friendship with Stewart at that point. And maybe at the one before that, Stewart had told me he was working on getting Tony Clifton. Because the one before that was when I dressed up as Tony Clifton.
Okay. So you were already a fan of Tony Clifton.
And everybody at Chiller knew. Because there was Tony Clifton was at that Chiller that October.
Ah, John.
Tony
okay,
Clifton
yeah.
Was actually at that Chiller.
You're resurrecting the memory. So this was something that we were hoping that you would be able to absolutely strike gold on. I think that was the because I remember sleeping in my car that night. I didn't go home. I slept in my car because either it was the night we did film it and I just stayed in my car or. What? Well, but Jesus, that was a crazy night because we were there to capture him.
Yeah, Stuart hates when I talk about this because he wasn't there for this part. And remember, Stuart brought Tony Clifton. Oh. You know, but remember, after the Tony Clifton portion of the concert, his handler, his videographer, Jeremy Johnson, came up to us and said, remember, there was a couple had gotten married at that chiller.
Yeah.
And they were having a party in their room.
Oh, and we had that night with Grandpa Tony.
Tony Clifton's holding court at this newlywed's room, and he wants you guys to come up there.
Yeah.
And so we went and we hung out with Tony till 4 a.m. in somebody else's room.
No, John, that was like one of the best nights of my life in New Jersey, especially at that time. You know, my grandfather and my dog had just passed, and he hung out with us like a grandfather hangs out with grandchildren. We knew his legend. We had been celebrating it a year before. We were sitting on a couch with an iteration of him that was bona fide, you know? And you were able to dig into the mythology and the conversation of the mythology with him in such a respectful way. And he knew you were being respectful, so you guys were able to talk about it and sometimes have to switch into code so as not to reveal things or to talk about things openly. And you got to enjoy the conversation of the mythology of Andy Kaufman and Tony Clifton, and we did it like on a couch late at night at a swanky party, which is so Tony Clifton, you know. We all remained clothed. We all kept our clothes on, and we stayed off the hard drugs. But we're definitely drunk. And Gary Busey was definitely in the room as well.
That's right, he did that whole thing with Jake Busey. Like, Jake Busey pretended to heckle him during the concert, and he threw him off. That's all in your video. It's great. Yeah, you guys will hear a lot of this. You won't hear the late night conversation in somebody else's hotel room.
We never got to film that, but that's okay.
Which is fine, because again, that was just for those who were there.
I just assure you, it was a good.
You know, I'm sorry that you were not there. I think it would have been great for you to be there. But Stuart, the next morning, has an even greater experience, I think. So he basically says Bob Zabuda sees him at the bar that morning, that Sunday morning. Bob Zabuda is no longer, you know, with Tony.
Mm.
And he hands Stuart a Ziploc baggie with Tony Clifton's prosthetic nose in it. So Stuart has an actual Tony Clifton prosthetic nose.
And it's the nose from that night.
It would be the next morning, right?
Does he wear a different nose every day?
I think for Sunday he wasn't making an appearance. He was a Saturday only thing.
So the night he sat on the couch with us, he probably took the nose off.
After we left him at 4 o'clock, he got his makeup off.
Yeah.
And then gave Stuart the nose.
Wow, okay, good. That's it. Wow.
Later that morning, as it were, right?
Evidence, yeah. That's fantastic. Good time.
And I go, Stuart, that's great. What did you do? And he goes, it's still in the same Ziploc bag in a drawer somewhere. I was like, oh, man, I put that on a shrine. I put that in, like, one of those things they put signed baseballs in.
Yeah, you know, right?
Could, like, throw light on it. So.
Yeah. I think it'll, anyway. So
Bart, I thank you so much for giving me that opportunity to interview Tony back then. I know some of those videos you've put up on your YouTube channel, and I know some of you've taken down and whatnot. It'd be great if you go through the archives and put some of those back up there. Like, I think people would love to see the Lou Ferrigno interview, and I think that I think there's a lot of other cool stuff that you put up there. But
just
this little documentary you made, folks, it's going to run the rest of the show. It's going to be about 40 minutes, but this little documentary that you made is really just such a great encapsulation, like I said, of what Chiller is and what that experience is like. And again, with how Tony behaved at Chiller, it is a unique time capsule, because again, Tony Clifton will never be asked back at Triller, and I think that that's how he wanted it that way, I'm sure. So before you go, Bart, anything you got in the pike? I know you've been doing some writing lately. Any other film projects up down the road, or
no film projects down the road? Although you and I, maybe we should talk about something, you know, to do with Shatner or something. You know, the legend of Shatner.
We've been talking maybe doing a revisiting of the Chiller Experience.
Yeah.
Involving some guests. So we'll see if we can make that happen.
Yeah. Grassroots Productions. Fun stuff, but you know, otherwise no. For writing though, writing is a beautiful thing because you could do it at home. I've been writing a story. It's a book. It's 340 pages. It'll probably be something different later. It's called Summer Shift. Okay.
Nice.
Thank you.
Nice. All right. Cool. All right. So, folks, we really just have about a couple minutes left here. And normally, when I do the show, at the top of the show, I do some birthdays and sort of dedications, and I neglected to do that because this is such a different. This is an anomaly for me to not be doing this live. So I'm going to do that now. But I basically wanted to give a belated happy birthday to my friend and brother Sean Gantner. He turned 50, and it's been a rough few months for Sean, as I think I've talked about on a prior show in September. So we're all gathering with Sean as you listen to this. That was my prior commitment. I will be with Sean for celebrate his 50th birthday as this is airing live. And so I just wanted to kind of throw that out there. Sean, I love you. Happy birthday. And, you know, we're going to give you a partial dedication on this show. Also want to give a very special dedication, a happy birthday, and sure, we'll give a little bit of a dedication as well, but I think if things pan out, there will be a whole episode devoted to this person in the near future, hopefully this year. But yes, someone also very key to the Andy Kaufman world, Lynn Margulis Osgood, had a birthday on February 28th. So just, Lynn, if you are listening, happy birthday. And I hope what we have been talking about, we can make happen. And I'm not going to say too much more about that. But again, happy birthday to Lynn Margulis Osgood. If you know anything about Andy Kaufman's story, you know how important she was. But she is also a pioneer especially in that era, a comedy world dominated by men. She stood out and really, really made a name for herself as well. And is a wonderful artist and musician and just a great person. So happy birthday to Lynn. And on a sad note, I just want to say my deepest condolences. Bart, I know you're with me on this one. I know you love this little guy.
Yeah, Squiggy,
my deepest condolences to friend of the show and friend in life, Tom Palmer and his family. Their cat Squiggy passed away, and Squiggy was just a treasure. I consider him the king among all cats. Squiggy was an only cat, and really just acted as if he was just one of the group.
Yeah.
There would be many dinner parties at Tom's where we'd be sitting at the table talking, and then you'd hear like a meow and you'd look over and then sitting at the head of the table like a human, like that cat meme, right?
Yeah, person cat. Squiggy. Yeah.
Just sort of just, you know, approving the conversation and how people are going.
Yeah.
So Squiggy, we miss you. We love you.
Love you, Squiggy.
And family, our hearts go out to you. Well, that'll do it, folks, for the introduction to this video that we are going to be playing the audio of. So sit back, relax, and enjoy Bart's documentary, his audio version of his short documentary about a weekend at Chiller Theater Expo in April of 2011 with a Tony Clifton concert and interview thrown in the mix. Until next month, thank you for listening to the Pep Talk. Enjoy the rest of the show, and we'll see you, we'll hear you live in 1 month. Ha 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 ha!
come right towards me, okay? I'm the walking monster. You got that? Keep that camera steady, okay? Don't laugh. This is serious.
Season's greetings, culture lovers. New Jersey's naughtiest, creepiest, coolest, fan-filled, talented tour de force of awesomeness returns once again to give us Tony Clifton this year at 2011's Chiller Theater Expo in Parsippany, New Jersey.
Like a rhinestone cowboy.
Yeah, there's vendors. Oh, and other stars like Michael Gross.
Bobby Brady.
The Brady Kids. Cool Dean Stockwell. The adorable Bavarian-ish, German-esque kid who gets sucked up the tube in Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. Yeah, that one. He was there. The gorgeous Vivica Fox, who most know from Kill Bill. Ernest Borgnine. Lonnie Anderson. Hal Linden. Ray Don Chong. Yeah, there was Butch Patrick, who was Eddie Munster. The ever-awesome Gary Busey.
And I want to get in here, and I set up the last mission, which was the CIA commission in the jungles. And that's how we lost the character that Arnold played. We lost him 9 weeks after the movie was over. That's why he's not here.
It looks like an Oreo, but it's an onion. This girl loves onion and garlic because that's the only thing the predator will go for. So she eats onions and garlic. They look like Oreos, and I'm not kidding you. If I was kidding you, I wouldn't be here. I'd be somewhere else in a different suit of clothes working in a regular job.
Gary,
thank you very much.
Here, have your cookie.
Thanks, I'll see you
You're
later.
You're welcome, bye.
Our correspondent Rachel Fox met Joyce Heiser from the 80s HBO favorite film, Just One of the Guys.
Terry's a girl who wanted to be taken seriously.
I am going to be a reporter.
But her body kept getting in the way.
Pretty girl, you could be a model.
Sometimes I just wish I were a guy.
So to prove to the men in her life she had a mind, Terry decided to try life as a guy.
What a fox. Dresses like Elvis Costello. Looks like the Karate Kid. I'm gonna get him.
We had an opportunity to talk to her about this film.
Hello, this is Rachel Fox, and I'm about to interview Joyce Heiser, who I'm sure you will recognize from Just One of the Guys, as well as episodes of the Flash series in which she was pursued by the Trickster. And we're about to ask her some questions. I'm very excited about that, because she's pretty. I'm sure you get this a lot, but you were totally like a very influential like girl crush that I had. It was like you and Annie Lennox were the two like amazing ladies of attractiveness. And I wanted to thank you for being such a... And your The Flash was also pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Because I'm also a fan of Mark Hamill, and so it must have been really fun to work with him and like his crazy facial expressions and like...
He's so much fun. He was so much fun. I actually really always envied his gift for gab. He literally can talk and talk and talk and talk without even taking a breath. And yet, interesting. It's
yeah,
not,
yeah, yeah.
And I'm never really been able to do that. So I just thought, oh God, he's so fun and so entertaining. And we had The Flash was a really tough shoot because, you would average maybe 22-hour days on that show because of the special effects. And back then, we didn't have CGI. Now. So they were real effects. So you had to wait around and wait around and wait
be, like,
around.
Tied up and have to be rescued. And Yeah.
Exactly. Yes, I got tied up. I think one of the great things about Just One of the Guys is that even though it's sort of this kind of silly teenage movie. There's so many really great kind of subversive themes. Yeah, I had a no nudity clause in my contract, and I did not want to do it. And they knew that up front. And they said, well, you know, we'll go along and let's see how you feel. So towards the end of the movie, the director, Lisa Gottlieb, said to me, look, I really would like to just try. We'll shoot it both ways. And then you'll look at it, we'll show you the dailies, and you decide what you want to do. And I did. And there was no other way.
Well, because it wasn't sexual nudity, it was almost emotional nudity, you know? It was just an honest moment.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Emotional nudity.
Yeah.
I like that.
Hi, I'm Pete Timoney, and I'm here with Pete Ostrom, the man who played Charlie Bucket in the original Willy Wonka.
Thank you. Very good.
So how old were you when you made this movie?
12 years old.
12 years old. So how do you occupy your time these days?
I'm a veterinarian.
A veterinarian?
That's correct.
Oh, that's very interesting.
A little different.
So Willy Wonka was an amazing movie and kind of a scary one for me as well.
A little bit. The tunnel scene.
Yeah.
It's a little scary.
Like, I think the part that got me was when Augustus Gloop got stuck in that pipe.
Mm-hmm.
Was there any of it, was it scary to you as well, seeing this?
Not really, because when you're making a film, everything gets broken down.
Uh-huh.
And so it's not scary at all when you're filming.
Okay. What is your fondest memory of making the film?
Probably working with Jack and Gene Wilder. We were together a long time, 5 months making the film. So it was hard work, but at the same time, you know, incredibly rewarding.
Can you belch on command?
I can't, and that's a great trivia question, because that is not me belching.
Oh, no.
Somebody in California makes a living off of belching.
Ah, well, thank you so much. Peter Ostrom.
I even found time to flirt with Judy Aronson and Suzanne Snyder, who played Deb and Hilly in Weird Science, a favorite 80s film. Night finally falls and our evening blooms. Out came Tony Clifton, and here is what we saw.
Told by the management of the Hilton Hotel that I could not smoke on stage because it's fucking illegal. They said, Tony, if you light a goddamn fucking cigarette on stage,
this is John Pepe here at Chiller Spring Spooktacular 2011. I am hanging out with Tony Clifton. Mr. Clifton?
International singing sensation, Tony Clifton.
I was going to get to that. How are you today, sir?
I'm doing good. I'm having a good time here myself. This is the first year I came out. It's great to see the fans and meet everybody and see people face to face.
Exactly, exactly.
Then every once in a while I'll get lucky with a groupie.
Or more than one, correct?
Absolutely.
Exactly. Now, Mr. Clifton, you are easily the most recognizable, most talented, most distinguished, and most influential entertainers in all of entertaining.
That is true.
Miss Piggy is proud to present a man who needs an introduction. Mr.
Tony Clifton!
Tony Clifton!
I think he's just wonderful, don't you all?
I can rhyme anywhere with song. Song. Long. Wrong. King Kong. King Kong, Empire State Building. Oh.
Isn't he something?
Go to the store.
Interesting.
Oh. Oh, hi.
What a discovery.
That is true. That is true. Yeah.
And we know your story.
Yeah.
What we want to know is, where were you before you were discovered by that comedian, what's his name?
You mean Kaufman.
Yeah.
Kaufman discovered me in 1969. It's true. He discovered me in Las Vegas. I was playing a little lounge. And I was playing a little lounge there, and I had been playing there for about 2-3 years. And Kaufman came in one day, and I didn't know him. I didn't meet him at the time. Then what he did, he wasn't famous at the time. He went to see Elvis. Elvis was playing over at the Hilton. That was in 69, Elvis's comeback. So Kaufman came in to see Elvis, not to see the show. He had no money. He hitchhiked from Great Neck, because Andy had no money. And he hitchhiked across the country because he wanted to talk to Elvis personally, because he wanted to be a performer himself, and he wanted the benediction from the king himself. So the true story is, as Andy told me, he went early to the Hilton, and he hid in the kitchen. He walked in the kitchen area, like he was delivering stuff, and he walked in, and he hid in a broom closet, and he brought himself a plastic gallon so he could pee in it, because he was going to wait. See, back then in Vegas, they had dinner shows, so the showroom was built right off of the kitchen back then. They had the showroom. So Elvis would never go down the regular public elevator. He'd go down the waiter's elevator, you know, the service elevator that would go into the kitchen. So Andy would hung out there, and he waited till Elvis came down. He told me this, with the West Brothers. The West Brothers was Red and Sonny West, and they're called the Memphis Mafia. They were Elvis's bodyguard. Bodyguards, his high school buddies. And so Andy waited, and Elvis would come down that elevator 10 minutes before the show, because he'd make up in his room. No dressing room, none of that bullshit. And he came walking down that thing, and Andy jumped out. And the West Brothers went for their guns. But Elvis saw that this is the skinny little Jew, you know? So he goes, whoa, it's okay. He says, Elvis goes, whoa, to the guys, the guns away. And the true story, and this is what changed Andy's life. And he looked at Elvis Presley, who to him was the biggest celebrity, the star of all stars. And he said to him, he said, Elvis, someday I want to be famous like you. And Presley, there's a true story, looked at Andy Kaufman, put his hand on his shoulder, and said, I believe it will happen. And that was it. And then he just kept walking. And because of that, 1 year later, about a little year and 2 months later, Andy Kaufman became the hottest cabaret act in New York City at the Improvisation. Because of that. That gave him the confidence. When the king says, I believe it will happen. And then that night, so he didn't even see the show. He didn't have money. That's all he wanted to do is to talk to Elvis, you know, that he got in. And that night he went to the what they call Old Vegas, what they call the Poor Vegas. And I was performing in a club there. He saw me. And of course, he just couldn't believe he saw something this great. But he didn't talk to me. So what he did then, he went over to the, he went back to L.A., back to New York. And that's when he started doing his Carnegie Hall show. And he did an impression of me. And I heard about it in the paper. Mickey Mallet told me, called me, hey, Tony, congratulations. I hear you're playing Carnegie Hall. I said, Mickey, what are you talking about? He said, no, it's in the paper. It's in New York Times. I said, what? I'm not playing no Carnegie Hall. He showed it to me, and it said, Andy Kaufman. It said, opening act, Tony Clifton. And I said, well, this is bullshit. You know, nobody contacted me. So I found out who his manager was. The fucking Jewish Sheeny bastard. The fucking George Shapiro. And I called, and George Shapiro wouldn't take my phone call at first because I didn't have too much money, so I was putting money in the phone booth. I guess they are hearing the ding-a-ling, the ring come back. That's what you could do in the old days. And they wouldn't take my... So not until I got my own Jew lawyer that called him and said, what the fuck is this about? And then Andy was very apologetic. He said, you know, your flattery, imitation is the highest form of flattery, all that bullshit, you know? So then he called me, and then I opened for him at Carnegie Hall. Then we kept working years and years. 40 years. That's a true story.
Excellent. Now, you did mention this is your first convention appearance.
Yeah.
Why now? Why the Chiller Spring Spooktacular?
Well, I knew nothing about this, but Stuart over here is the guy. And do you know Stuart?
I've met him. Yeah.
Yeah, so Stuart has a lot of association with this place here. And he came to a couple of our shows. He said, Tony, you need to be at this thing. So we came here our first day yesterday. It was nice. Because usually, as you know, if you've been to my shows, I start drinking so much fucking Jack Daniels, I'm fucking out of my mind by the end. I don't see or talk to anybody. So at least I came in. It's fine to meet the fans such as yourself, people who understand that they are dealing with real talent here. Not these fucking people that he's beat. Fucking Ernie. Who wants to see Ernie Borgnine? Fucking guys on his last fucking legs. They got me here, Brett Eklund. She looks like a piece of shit. You know what I'm talking about? You got me. I'm a rising star, not a has-been.
Now, speaking of your live shows,
yeah.
You recently came out with Tony Clifton live at the Sunset Strip.
Yes, yes. Did you see that?
I have not. Can you tell?
About it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Can you tell us?
In fact, he shot it. He shot it. He edited it up. This is Jeremy. That's my filmographer over here. And we shot it. There were four nights over at the Comedy Store back in May. We had eight cameras every night. He spent 6 months editing it. We had a first test screening 2 weeks ago in L.A. and brought down the house. So you're going to hear, this is going to be coming out soon.
Available on DVD or in theaters?
Oh, we're going to try to get this in theaters. We're going to enter it in some film festivals and stuff like that. Then eventually it'll make it to DVD.
Excellent, excellent. Yeah. Now, as one who has been to a live Tony Clifton show, it was me.
Oh, I'm always done.
That's the hope. And it was one of the greatest shows I've ever seen.
Which show did
we,
you go to?
We were at the Santos Party House.
Oh, you at Santos. Did you stay to the end?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Rhinestone Cowboy. Huh? Was that some night? Me and, you know, my newly adopted daughter, Keely. I remember her. Her and I went through, I think we went through three bottles of Jack Daniels, just me and me. I think I fell into the drum set at the end. I do.
Yes, I think you did too.
Crazy. But what a time we had.
It was fantastic. I was so happy.
Yeah, if they didn't pull the plug because it was like 4 in the morning, we'd still be singing.
Now, at that show, yeah. You told a story about something you did to a man. Okay? Now, I was very concerned about you telling this story.
Right,
and then...
Yes, what do you mean?
No. How you...
The way you said that.
Well, I don't want to kill the story for anybody who has not heard it.
Give me a little hint.
Well, because it's also on the new CD, Tony Clifton Sings Tender Songs of Love.
Oh, yeah, you bought one. Yeah, yeah, it's that
and,
CD. Yeah,
and on this
CD... Look at that picture.
Yeah, all the pictures.
You can do an insert of that, too. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Now, in this CD, you have a version of that song where you say that same story.
I killed the man. Yeah, I was drunk when I said it. But we put it on. Yeah.
Now, are you concerned about any legal ramifications from that, revealing this on the CD?
No, because now I'm letting you know I made it up. It is not true. It is not at all true. I did not really kill a man. And what I'm saying is just a drunken rage of insanity. There's no truth to it at all.
I think that'll hold up in court. Now, you are known for your charitable work with Comic Relief.
All the proceeds from this go to Comic Relief.
And the Katrina Kiss My Ass Orchestra.
Right, correct.
Why would a man who is accused of taking so much in his life feel the need to give back to so many?
Well, I'll tell you why. That's a very good question. The reason I'm doing this, and I do it pro bono for Comic Relief, because I'll tell you why. It was part of my community service I had to do. So it's about 65 hours of community service. I'm up to about 47 now. And then once it's over, that's enough of the charity stuff. Then I paid my debt to society.
Excellent.
I'm going to raise money for those fucking homeless. I think I see a homeless person come up to me, I try to run them over. Then get a fucking job to make something of your life. And my two homeless people, two homeless guys, they're sitting on a bench. One says the other one. He says, you know, Leo, he said, oh, man, I had a time yesterday. I found a $20 bill, and I had myself the greatest dinner, and I had dessert. It was great. And the other homeless guy says, oh, I could top you. He says, I was over at the train yard, and I'm walking down, and I see this beautiful woman who's tied to the train track. So I untie her, and we make love all afternoon. And the other homeless guy says, well, did she give you a blowjob? The guy says, no, I couldn't find her head.
Well, you're almost there finishing out the community service. It's a great story. Now, speaking of comic relief organizer Bob Zamuda.
Zamuda. What's his name? Zamuda.
Zamuda?
Fucking long hair. How old's the man? He's got fucking long hair down to here. Get a fucking haircut already.
Well, I was.
1968? What the fuck's wrong with that, my guy?
Well, that blows my next question.
I think he's pocketing all that charity money anyway. That guy's getting rich.
I was going to ask if you're still in contact with him and if maybe you can tell people how they can help and donate to Comic Relief.
I don't give a fuck about Comic Relief. I'm telling you, I'm playing my community service. That's it. That's it. I don't give a shit.
Excellent. Tony Clifton, ladies and gentlemen, the great, unreplaceable, irresistible Tony Clifton. We are at the Chiller 2011 Spring Spooktacular. We are chilling at Chiller. Tony Clifton sings tender songs of love. Buy it. Listen to it. Live it. It's the greatest album.
Spanking her ass. Look how red her ass is.
And the movie is Tony Clifton live at the Sunset Strip. Come into a theater near you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Very good. Good
honor.
Good job. Good job.
Pull out driving here.
the fucking dumb Polacks. Hear about the Polack whose wife had triplets? He went out looking for the two other guys. What sound does a baby when you put in the microwave? I don't know, I was jerking off.
Can we get monitors, please?
That'll help, huh?
Need some sound in the drum monitors.
I'm gonna monitor for me, so I can hear what the fuck I'm saying.
He needs one.
Oh, thank you. How you doing, my friend? Give me a little monitor up here so I can hear my fucking self think. So, pedophile goes home to his wife. Says, honey, she's dead. Hello? Hello? So the pedophile goes to his wife and she's mad. He says, I'm leaving you. He goes, why are you leaving me? Because you're a pedophile. The pedophile, that's a pretty big word for a 14-year-old. I don't know if you heard this tonight, but I don't want to put a damper on things, but at 5:30 this evening, if you were watching CNN, some of you know this, a great performer guy that we all know, we love him, I don't think he's ever done these, but 5:30 tonight, he passed away, and it was Glenn Campbell. Glenn Campbell died tonight, 5:30. So let's do one with the Glenn Campbell song. So look, we're gonna do one of Glenn Campbell's biggest hits. Let's have a respect for him. Rhinestone Cowboy.
Like a rhinestone cowboy, riding down on the horse in the stock, rainbow road. Like a rhinestone cowboy, riding on the plains.
guy to make love to a woman. You put shit in her pussy. So two pedophiles are sitting on a park bench. One says the other one, I had myself a 12-year-old last night. And the other pedophile says, we've all had ourselves 12-year-olds. And the other pedophile says, yeah, but this one had the body of a 7-year-old.
It was a hell of a chiller. This is Bart Capuano with Anthem News. I thank you, and good night.